Hello, and welcome back to No Downtime, a podcast from Fort Rock Data Center located in beautiful Central Oregon. Connor and Levi here with you again, and in this episode, we were joined by Tim Moravaco. Tim is a Fort Rock client who utilizes rack space at the data center for some of his own entrepreneurial ventures. He founded IP Copper, which offers network forensics and packet capture data analysis services used for network health and cybersecurity implementation. And as a software developer and someone that's forward-thinking, Tim brings a unique perspective to tech history and trends. We had a great interview with him, and we're looking forward to having him back on the show. Well, we'd be remiss, Tim, if we didn't hear a little bit about you here.
Okay.
So just give us, tell us who you are and just introduce yourself a little bit. I know that you use a lot of the data centers, services for your, entrepreneurial ventures and whatnot. So, yeah, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, I'm, I work with the local company and I'm a software engineer. I design things and come up with ideas and I have a rather diverse background in terms of design and stuff, ranging from video, audio, data processing. I like data processing, and I've been doing it for a while. And part of the reason, for example, I know about intimately how the fiber optic works is because back in the day I was designing the modems, fax modems, and so I know exactly how that technology works. And before today's adoption of VoIP, back in the day I was designing the first versions of that the systems and technology, and that's what I do. And part of what we use in the data centers in the last 15 years, I've been making amazing systems to help people with networking appliances. And so we were one of the first in the business to introduce packet capture systems. And that takes a lot of processing capacity. We were the first ones our design was, for example, synchronized GPS packet stamping was the first, everybody followed. And we were the first ones to introduce 10G packet capture, and that was amazing design, where we can capture every single packet on the 10G circuit, which is at the time and still today is a pretty substantial achievement. And but today we more focus on the idea of giving the tools to the public to process data and improve, basically bring the thing from the cloud back home, that computing power, so that way they're able to realize that dream of privacy, data processing, and still use the technology. And that's that Fort Rock, you guys have put a good effort in it. And so hopefully people will be able to, without technology, would be able to use that location to improve their computing needs, because that's kind of where we are going with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I want to just have a conversation, but I put together three kind of talking points that I thought were interesting. First one is kind of what you've already started with, and that's a 30,000 foot view of the tech timeline.
Just consider, it's a big picture. IBM 360 in the then, it goes into power switches to the people, and now power is again in the hands of the cloud. Cloud is exactly the same 360, IBM 360, there's no difference. And there's going to be again
shift away
from data centers actually. But the question is your data center actually a data center in the conventional meaning of it? What I'm saying is that the difference is collocation and a data center, those are two different concepts in general.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, that's that difference.
I mean, there's a trend of, not a trend, but I'm sure you guys have seen all these new hyperscale data centers that are being put in to support AI platforms. Mm-hmm. And just last week, for example, there was plans were approved for a 40,000 acre AI data center in northern Utah.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. I just think that the discourse around this is so interesting, because just this week or the last 7 days or so, did anybody see that video from the University of Central Florida commencement speech at their graduation?
No, I didn't see that.
I haven't seen that.
Well, there was a, I'm curious to get your guys' takes on this, because AI tools are definitely going to be a part of our lives, whether people necessarily want them to be or not. So at this, it was a graduation commencement speech at the University of Central Florida. And it was, I believe it was actually the College of the Humanities. So you're looking at communications people, arts people, things like that. And the speaker basically just said that the rise of artificial intelligence is the new industrial revolution. And she was met with boos from basically the entire crowd of students. and just kind of looked flabbergasted. So obviously, this is a very contested issue.
Well, I think it's ironic. It's definitely ironic talking to students about AI, how it's going to take your job. But on the AI, the question as to data centers, you guys already talked about the power. And ironically, I don't think actually it will end up coming to pass, the amount of power people imagine data centers would need. Because as I pointed out, how the AI works, it's that endless repetition. It's absolutely ripe for optimization. And at that point, everybody who invested in oversized, overpowered, they might find out that they just have, you know, a lot of space, a lot of power, but they don't have the need for it. Then those people who build large data centers, they say, hey, not so fast. We kind of need to kind of make some, you know, return on investment. Otherwise, we're just going to be out of business. It will optimize ourselves out of existence.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you even bring it back to early landlines, right?
Exactly.
Or early telephone switching operators, where you've got an individual who is connecting phone calls as they come in. And then, of course, eventually technology advanced and that position was no longer needed. So, like you said, the optimization comes in and, you know, it reworks how this tech works, and maybe there's no longer a need for that job, or so it's not necessarily a new thing, where obviously technology, you know, sort of makes some of these things maybe not necessarily obsolete, but it opens the door for, you know, other pathways there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I kind of wanted to get your guys' take, because there's obviously a ton of discourse out there. I mean, I'm going to give you just one more example here. So last month, the residents of the small town of Festus, Missouri, a town of about 12,000 people, they actually ousted four incumbent city council members running for re-election after they approved the construction of a $6 billion AI data center just outside of town. So it's just, you know, this is a very contested issue, and the power and the water required, just as an example, this new 40,000 acre data center in Utah, it's expected to require 9 gigawatts of energy, which is not a small amount. That's actually more than the entire state of Utah is expected to use. But they're saying that it's going to be operating on a closed loop system for cooling to preserve water. So I just want to get your guys' take
on... It's self-contained. It's its own thing. Don't worry about it.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
We'll have a nuke reactor on site.
Well, you look at it
with
from
our
like,
own water cooling.
You look at it from Fort Rock's perspective, because, you know, what level of energy does Fort Rock use right now?
Very little.
Right. I mean, and it's not... It wasn't built to be a hyperscaled AI data center, right?
We can do high-density power, you know, for HPC and whatnot. Right. And we can host AI, but exclusively as an AI data center?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Well, it would be at this time, it would be a really, I mean, if you use it, you know, build it with somebody else's money, that would be, you know, the best time, because at this point you pay the premium for being the first guy in you know, through the door type thing. And that part, like with optimization, typically it goes fast enough that everybody who got in the door first, they would be looking at losing money and a lot of it, because it just, and it's the same thing that with that story of the fiber in the year 2000, you know, all of those, the MCI, and what is it, Global Crossing, I think.
Well, the other thing too is advancements in technology, purity, reflection, you know, refraction, et cetera. A lot of the earlier fiber, they said, oh, we don't know what the lifespan is.
Yeah, that was a big
question.
We
think it's maybe 40 or 50 years, maybe 80 years, you know. And we've seen, like with a lot of fiber, the electronics, the optics, are the you know, the expensive part that you have to upgrade, not the physical fiber from end to end. So, I mean, it's, you know, well, we learn as we go.
The fiber thing is that what's actually interesting about fiber, that for many people don't realize that one cool thing about the fiber is that you can actually make very resilient networks with it, which is impossible to make it with copper because of the cost. Because with fiber, you can just put a prism and split the signal and you have a backup instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. And another wave.
And with the copper, you can't do that. You have to have a piece of equipment that would effectively replicate that electrical signal. And so the, you know, fiber is a really more universal. It was a good investment that people collectively made back in the day, but it's one of those things. The question would be, is it going to be in 10 years, people are going to look at the AI and say it was a good investment? I'm not so sure about that, actually, because there's just a lot more hype because there's no other technological advancement that people can put on the table and justify the existence of Facebook, Google, and stuff.
Yeah. And going back to what you said about, you know, you've got access to all this information, but how do you make sure it analyzes it in a way that makes sense? So I think of, for example, you know, you guys have heard of these, there's a couple of court cases that they had used AI tools to do some background research and to find relevant cases that would apply to this one. And the AI tools that they had used basically just kind of fabricated a case essentially to try and support this argument that was being presented in court. So the case had to basically, it was a mistrial essentially. So I think that's kind of what you're coming back to, is these programs are written to solve a problem and to satisfy the user no matter the cost, right? Even if it's maybe wrong.
AI is just like a hammer. You know, if you have hands that work well, you know, any hammer would do good. But short of that, no help is possible. And so that's kind of what I'm saying is that if you look at the AI as a solution for all the problems, I think it would be an illusion, a serious illusion for many. And and particularly the idea of trusting that AI comes up with this answer or that answer. And AI is just nothing more than a tool that repetitively goes through and tries this, that, or the other. And then until it matches within certain criteria of a range of answers. So essentially, it's the same thing like I explained with the echo. It's very easy to visualize. What happens is that the algorithm just listens to, there's a feedback loop, and it just checks. It's like, well, did we reduce the echo enough? Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And just repeats that literally a million times per second, and then that's it. And but I can tell you how I solved that problem back in the day, if you guys are interested.
Yes, please.
Well, the problem was, I say, do you guys understand what the problem is with the echo?
Yeah.
Echo bad.
Well, sometimes it's good, sometimes not so much. But
if there's a delay in an echo, I mean, I've experienced this with international calls.
Yes.
You hear yourself talking, it's like you're talking on top of yourself.
Exactly.
And so as you start to say something, you're hearing what you just said a second ago, and your brain's like, should I listen to this or ignore it?
Right.
And when you try to ignore it,
find yourself pausing or like trying to listen, wait for yourself to talk before you can start talking again, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about like yelling in a canyon, echo, echo.
Exactly.
It's that same type of concept of I'm going to have a conversation and rattle off a bunch of information as my brain's processing it. And then hearing that all come back to you at the same time, it can kind of like overwhelm or, I guess that's probably just the best way of wording is overwhelming your.
But at the same time, you actually need that echo. It makes you feel comfortable because when we're talking right now,
you can hear yourself.
You hear yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of gives you a feedback that you're not just kind of not talking. And so that element of it is very, very important. And, so the difficult part is that it seems like you hear it, you know what you need to remove, but how do you pinpoint that part that needs to be removed?
Mm-hmm.
So because what the problem is that when your voice comes out on the other end and re-enters the loop on the other end, it's not actually the same voice anymore. It already got processed twice, first for the playback and then for the recording part. And so when it comes back to you, that challenge becomes you have to remove not exactly what you sent, but you have to remove something that is similar. And that's the most difficult problem for any computer, to find similarity, because similarity, you deal with probabilities. You no longer have certainties because, you know, it's not like 2 + 2. You have, at that point, you know, you have 4, but what if it's 3.999? Is it 4 or is it close to 4? And then you have to deal with ranges. And then it becomes those ranges is what kills it. That's where you need to have that constant iteration to find out, is this close enough? If I take out a little bit here, would that be good enough? Mm-hmm. Take out a little bit there, would that be good enough? And then that takes an enormous amount of time, but the principle of it is extremely simple. So there's another approach to the echo, is that you can try to remove it by predicting what the echo should be. And you do that by learning what it became. Does it make sense? So essentially when it comes back and you say, well, This echo, this sound that came back, it is somewhat similar, and it got to be what you just said. Mm-hmm. The only problem, as you can see, there could be, what if that somebody just quacked on the other side, and they're just trying to match that quack with your voice, and all of a sudden, everything is thrown off. And the challenge with that is that it requires a lot of computing, and eventually they give up. So essentially, the current echo cancellation system, that's why speakerphones, there's no standard, because they struggle with that so mightily, because... Mm-hmm. And at one point, you all experience at one point or the other where it just simply clicks, where the algorithm just says, can't figure it out, I'll just cut the whole thing off. And that's what happens sometimes.
I sometimes do that by hitting the button. I talk to my wife on speakerphone. I'm like, sound horrible. Turn me off the speakerphone.
Exactly.
Right. Or Bluetooth headphones on.
And, because at one point, the DSPs just simply cannot... in time, figure out the answer that is in the range. And so they just clip off this, clip off that, clip off that. And so at the time when the way I solved that problem, because there's no way to digitally solve that problem, so I came up with a very simple system of several resistors and a capacitor. And so the effect of that, what I did, I just shrunk, and there was a visually, you know, in my case, it was a story of a bottle. It looks like a bottle. The way, you know, I was trying to shrink the body of the bottle, where it becomes kind of like flattened, and that's it. And so what I'm saying, the solution to complex problem was a cost of several resistors and the capacitor, or an enormous amount of time in the software and DSP. And you still have the same quacking and stuff like that back at you. And so what I'm saying is that that's the problem of the AI and understanding AI, because somebody can bang their head on the wall and say, we will solve the problem this way. And then the other guy is like,
you just created a new problem. Right? Well, you know, when you were talking about that, it reminded me of telephony in general, how when I first started, dozen years ago, we were getting trouble tickets, and we had businesses calling in saying, hey, my voice sounds great when I call long distance, okay, but we cannot fax long distance. And, dual tone multi-frequency, DTMF, would constantly fail because of that noise canceling, echo canceling, EQ, etc. And then there was also, like you said, portions that were being cut off when we looked at that. Uh-huh. And then you, on top of that, interlace least cost routing. Uh-huh. So instead of taking the most direct, lowest latency route, they're routing traffic through the lesser expensive routes, which introduce latency. And then you have a recipe for disaster. So,
well, that part that we described, there's actually, you glossed over the whole bunch of actual problems. What you described is those visible ones, but the underlying issue was actually a little different. In fact, it's a misconception, but it's actually really simple to understand. It has nothing to do with AI, though, but it does have something to do with the concept. People just imagine that it's the same voice here, and it just travels to be the same voice there all the way to the other end. In reality, it's not, because it gets converted so many times in the process. Each conversion, you lose a little bit of data, sometimes a lot, and that's the effect. What you dealt with is not an issue with echo cancellation per se, latency per se, but primarily how many times it gets converted.
Yep.
And the conversions were unequal. And so as a result, it's essentially, I refer to that as a problem of $1.99, because it's like, well, the price is $1. So the guy says, well, I'll give you 99 cents. If you take that route, eventually it would be zero.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just a question how many
times. A little shave here, a little shave there.
Yes. Yep. Because you never add, you always shave. And so the effect of that is that there's just no way to use faxes. And but there, you know, that also was solved. Even though they came up with complicated solution, that solution actually ended up working. And, you know, they came up with additional special protocols, so faxes will be processed this way and stuff like that, and DTMFs will be processed this and that. But it all died successfully, and which is kind of a whole interesting topic on its own. But from perspective of the quality, what would be interesting to talk about is the fact that how the cell phones today,
oh yeah,
how the quality is supposed to have improved, but no, they on purpose just cut it at this point where they just, they would not let it move past that point, even though it could. You know, mm-hmm. There's plenty of capacity in there, but they're just not letting it.
Well, when you have better quality sound, but you have more bandwidth.
and it's not necessarily the issue, because that bandwidth issue was already solved quite some time ago in terms of the, you could transmit, you know, the processing capacity increased, and so you could pack more data into the same bandwidth. So I think that there's some other ulterior motives as to why the technology has been held back in terms of, because I haven't thought about it enough to kind of figure out what is the rationale behind, but there got to be some kind of rationale, mm-hmm. because it doesn't make any sense. There's the microphones on cell phones are excellent. The speakers are so, but why not make it so that people would enjoy the conversation fuller? So they have a fuller range mm-hmm. of the dynamic range of the sound. Yep. So people just, you know, but they're not doing it. And it's actually was set up in a way that it's limiting on purpose on the transmission end with between the companies, where they, you know, when they interface to companies and how they transmit the voice from one to the other, mm-hmm. they get into that bottleneck right there. So essentially the phone can do it, but you have to bypass the middlemen who are refusing to do it.
I figured it's a lot of legacy telecom out there. You know, hey, we're still on our TDM, or we're still on our...
it's possible, but I don't really think that it's likely. There's some... I think it's... There got to be some kind of simple explanation, but what it is, I would say it's probably either political or some kind of an issue of that kind that... You know, maybe they don't have enough capacity to analyze, you know, for spying purposes and stuff like that. Mm. They're limiting it. You know, who knows?
You guys ever watch Hot Ones, the show? You know, kind of towards the end.
Where no,
like,
what's
this
that?
Camera, this camera, this camera. Tell the people what you got going on.
Hot Ones?
You never seen Hot Ones? Really?
I've never heard of it. What is it? I got to write this down.
It's a show on YouTube where the interviewer brings on celebrities and other people and then interviews them while making them eat increasingly spicy hot wings.
Oh, I have heard of that. Okay, I didn't know what it was called.
Well, the only reason I bring that up is because at the end, hot he wings. Gives the guest an opportunity to tell the people what he's got going on in the world. You know, you can, I'd love to hear more about kind of your business and just kind of.
That would be for the next thing. We'll plug it in a little bit, because there's more to discuss about that, because, you know, there's more interesting stuff. There's, yeah, exactly.
But wait, who is this Tim guy?
I gotta get it out of you at some point. So
we'll come back to it. You know, it just it's
the
not
uncommercial secret- commercial.
Yes, it's exactly. You figured that one out.
All right. Yeah. Well, we can totally continue the conversation, but for the sake of a podcast episode, I think I'll do just a quick little outro, and then we can kind of continue to go from there. Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us on this episode. We're looking forward to having you again. Absolutely. So, you know, hey, if you like this episode, give us a like and subscribe, and then we'll catch you next time here on No Downtime. Fort Rock Data Center is a purpose-built facility strategically located in the high desert of Bend in Central Oregon. We offer reliable business continuity and edge computing solutions that meet SOC 2 Type 1 compliance in a low-risk environment east of the Cascade Mountain Range. Learn more at fortrockdc.com. Background music by Maxim Malko from Pixabay.
And the widgets that are inside the software... Or inside the phone system, you know what I mean? You know those widgets, right? I'm just kidding. When I hear myself leave a voicemail, I go, oh my gosh, I sound like a nerd. I'm like, hi, this is Levi's calling to check and see, you know, and I'm like, I sound horrible. Do I sound that way on the phone? And then like the podcast, I can't even listen to the podcast.